Welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair of the Business Marketing Club network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Andrea Clatworthy, head of account-based marketing at Fujitsu, Robert Ainger, B2B marketing director and consultant, Ros Barclay, director of marketing and PR agency Coverdale Barclay, Andrew Ainsworth, Marketing Strategy Manager at Sirium, and Chris Bagnall, CEO and founder at Transmission, all about what's needed to do great B2B marketing in the 2020s. And as the decade started already, there's no time to delay. Let's get started. What makes a great B2B marketer in the 2020s? What skills are required and why? And how do you acquire those skills in the first place? I'm talking to a range of expert guests today to find out. And first up, Andrea Clatworthy, who's head of account-based marketing at Fujitsu EMEA. Andrea, welcome to the podcast.
Dave, thank you very much for having me.
Can you tell us, first of all, a little bit about Fujitsu?
So Fujitsu are an IT company. We're Japanese headquartered. But I'm based in the UK and I look after part of Europe. And we've been doing account-based marketing, which is what I'm primarily going to talk about, for about 6 years now.
And you're head of account-based marketing. So what skills do you need to be a great account-based marketer in 2020?
Well, I think the first thing is absolute customer centricity. You need to really understand the customers that you want to engage with. So you want to know what's going on in their world, what's keeping them and the CEO and the other key stakeholders that you want to engage with up at night. So everyone tells us this. Gartner tells us this. Mm-hmm. Forrester tells us this. All the sourcing advisors tell us this. And our own VOC program tells us this too. So we really need to listen to that and make sure we're enabling ourselves to respond to that.
I guess in the B2B world, that customer centricity means something slightly different to if I'm in, for example, FMCG. So how can you be customer centric where actually your decision maker group probably consists of, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 people?
Yeah, 7, 9, pick a number, yeah. You know. There's lots of ways to do it. The way we do it at Fujitsu is the ABMer, the marketeer, works really closely with the account team, like really closely. They're okay. Part of that team. They're okay. A peer in that team. So you start off with desk research, which everyone can do, that basic insight that you can get. But when you start to talk to the customer, you really get under their skin. So ask them questions. And that's the kind of insight that's not available in the public domain.
And if you kind of look at this as a kind of contained project, I guess, how much time should you be spending on desk research versus actually that primary research with the customer themselves?
It varies. You know, the account team, if it's an existing account, the account team might already have a really good view, but they might only know one part of that organisation. You've got to remember, most organisations are pretty big and have lots of business lines and business units and things. So understanding that is part of the thing. So how much time? I don't think you can put a time scale on it. It's about getting to the point where you have enough insight to start to make some decisions.
How about if we turn this, look away from process and instead turn it into a skills conversation? So what skills do I need to be customer-centric?
You need to be really curious. You need to be really nosy. You need to be able to ask lots of questions. And you know, the best question is why, of course. You know, why, and then why again, and then why again. But mostly curiosity.
And that sounds like that has to be something I inherit rather than something I learn.
Oh, I think you can learn it. You know, there's tools that you can think about using, you know, a checklist of questions to ask if you can't think them up yourself.
Okay. And are there things that you'd urge me to read or to look up online in order to begin to kind of cultivate my curiosity?
Well, I think if you think about a specific customer perspective, and a really good start is their website.
Okay.
And their annual report and what they're telling to their investors.
Okay. So customer centricity, really, really important skill to have. Would you say, though, that because we're focusing here on skills that are important in the 2020s, so is it a skill that's more important now than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
No, I don't think it is. But I think over recent times, we've forgotten customer centricity.
Okay.
We're so interested in measuring clicks and likes and things, and that's so what about
that? We've kind of got distracted.
Yeah, we've forgotten. Well, this is all about the customer.
Yeah. Okay, so customer centricity should be on my list. Anything else in terms of a skill that you'd suggest I look at?
I think if you remember that for most customers, they need to be touched 5, 7, 9 times before they remember you, then a key skill is thinking about how to do that, how to engage with the customer multiple times and through multiple channels and the channels that they're using. So there's no point putting a whole load of stuff on Instagram if the people in your decision-making unit don't touch Instagram.
Yeah.
So understanding those channels is pretty important too.
Yeah, and I guess kind of key to that is the fact that because you've got kind of repeated engagements with that customer, your content, your messaging has got to progress through that.
Through the buyer journey, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So when you're designing what you want to talk about and how you're going to talk about those things, you need to factor those in. So you need to be creating the right content to use for those touch points, for those meaningful moments, for those points of engagement.
And is that something that you can do before you've done the customer centricity point, or is are you giving me your skills in a very direct time based order?
I think
organised, Andy.
You need to understand your customer before you can work out what you're going to talk to them about.
Okay.
Because if you're not understanding them, you could be blasting them with spam, and that's that's not where we want to get to. The whole point of this is that we're communicating to the customer around topics that are highly relevant to them.
Okay. So that means you need to give me a third skill, which is sequentially the third thing in line that I need.
Maybe this isn't sequentially, actually, but it's the ability to work collaboratively with sales. So there is an element of sequentialness to this. If we make a massive assumption that a lot of initial engagement is through marketing, then as we move from the online world to offline, i.e. having a conversation, then primarily in our organisation, then that will be some sort of person, and that's normally a salesperson will take over. So you've got to have been on the journey with them, and they've got to have been on the journey with you. So you're aligned on your messaging. It's a natural continuation of that conversation. And then the sales person will use their skill set to develop an opportunity, uncover an opportunity, and then move through the selling process. And then there's another layer of support that we as marketeers can continue to apply to that buying journey.
And in some organisations, that kind of collaboration with sales is easier than in others, I guess. So for those listeners who are in a place where sales feels like a siloed and separate unit from marketing, what do you advise them to do?
This is a great question, and people ask me often, how did we do that? And genuinely, I don't know. Just did it, you know.
Yeah.
Human beings, working with human beings. I think there was an element of, as we took this one-to-one ABM approach, it was finding the right salespeople to engage with who would be receptive to it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once you start to get some traction and sales guys and account managers are saying, this works. And then it takes on a life of its own.
So it's not like you suddenly went and kind of converted the whole sales team. It sounds like you kind of picked people and colonised.
Ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, when I first rolled this out, which was in the UK business, I stupidly made a decision to roll it out to 58 accounts all at the same time, which meant we were working with 58 account managers, and that's not the way to do it. So if anyone's thinking about doing this, I recommend wholeheartedly starting small and picking the right accounts with the right account teams on and putting the right ABMer in that collaborative environment with them to make it something that you progress, maybe pilot first.
My sense is that actually marketers are more conscious now of the need to be able to collaborate with salespeople than I think they were 10, 20 years ago. And maybe that's because account-based marketing has changed a little bit what B2B marketing is all about.
I think you're right. I think there's another way to look at it. I think for marketeers to have a seat at the table, we need to be commercially aware. And to do that, we need to continually prove our value. Mm. So back to the measuring clicks thing, you're not proving any value there. Mm. So so how do you prove value? Well, by helping to uncover opportunities, shorten the buying cycle, help close deals.
Andrea Clatworthy, Head of Account-Based Marketing at Fujitsu EMEA, thank you very much. Next up, B2B Marketing Director and Consultant Robert Ainger. Robert, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thanks for inviting me. It's fantastic.
So, B2B Marketing Director and Consultant, tell me about what you do.
Yes, well, it is fantastic to be invited, but I've got to say I feel a little bit like a gatecrasher on this podcast.
You're a very welcome gatecrasher.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so. So I know that you're interviewing generally titans of the B2B industry, and I'm honoured to be amongst those. But my background is very solidly within B2B marketing. But now in my sort of consultancy role, I sometimes engage with B2B businesses, but not exclusively. Mm. So my background is that for 20 years, I was various roles within the client side of B2B marketing. And I ended up as corporate marketing director at Orange. Okay. And then I crossed the Great Divide and spent 4 years with an absolutely fantastic B2B marketing agency, The Marketing Practice. Mm. So I've seen so many different areas of B2B. But now as I see myself a little bit more as an outsider looking in. And I think that gives a good perspective.
I think that is an interesting perspective, because that means you're well placed to be able to tell me what makes a great B2B marketer in the 2020s.
I think it is a great position. It also means that I can perhaps slay some sacred cows without being worried about being sacked the next day that I see my boss. But to answer your question a little bit more directly, I think the context needs to be that now is an absolutely fantastic time to be a B2B marketer. In fact, I would say it's probably the most exciting time that we've seen in B2B marketing. And I think we're going into a whole new era where we're going to see businesses, B2B businesses, really and truly marketing led. Now, we've heard that term before, and I think people sometimes will smile and say, you know, perhaps that's a bit pie in the sky. But I think now is the time, and we'll look at the 2020s as really the time that we switched into that mode, and that B2B marketers, you know, perhaps even became the heroes of their business and really led them forwards. So I think we've got to think of B2B marketers, and certainly B2B marketer and marketing leaders, as all round, if you like, leaders of their business. And so I won't belittle in any way a very solid, you know, marketing skills-based background. And I know a lot of people on this podcast will talk about the importance of formal training. Mm. But I think you need to start to think about how you layer on top of that several other skills that will be really important to put that in context in terms of business leadership. So I would refer to, you know, perhaps a model that we've seen before around the challenger marketer. And that model talked about, which was a model that the CEB talked about a few years ago. And I think there's three prongs to that that stand out. So as well as having very solid marketing skills, I think the marketing leader of the future will need to be what they termed really customer native. Secondly, needs to be extremely business savvy. And thirdly, needs to be a problem solver, a really consultative problem solver. And all three of those elements are quite tough skills to acquire and experience to gain. But as you build your career towards being, you know, a true marketing leader in the future, I think you're going to need to consider those three aspects, as well as very strong basic marketing skills.
So I've got a sense here of what those kind of three general skill areas are then. But why are each of those skills required? Why are they important?
So I talked about businesses being marketing led. And let me just explain a little bit about why I think that's so important, and then I think those skills will fall into place a little bit more. So really, to be a successful business, I think, in the 2020s, you're going to need to navigate a high wire act where you're balancing between really understanding the very complex dynamics of the market and fast-moving markets on one side, but also maintaining but gradually enhancing the capabilities and the DNA of your business on the other hand. So in order to be able to really do that, and I think marketers are going to be perfectly placed, I think almost that's the definition of a great marketer.
Right.
You're going to have to be able to, firstly, really get under the skin of your business, hence the sort of business savvy skills, but also make sure that day in, day out, you never miss an opportunity to engage with your customers, engage with the market. And then you've got to find the way to bring those propositions together in a way that makes you win in the market in the long term. So those two skills, or those two skill sets, are going to be so essential for any successful business. And I think a B2B marketing leader is going to have to embody those skills. The problem-solving side, or the sort of consultative problem-solving, is really going to be, I think, a management skill that everybody in an agile business is going to have to be able to take on board. And that starts with tolerance of ambiguity, but also being able to analyse and respond to some strange sort of almost outliers in the market and be the one who's able to identify emerging trends and then bring those back into your business.
I'm interested then in how I would go about acquiring those skills in the first place. How do I become a problem solver?
Well, I think there are formal ways that you can do that. So there definitely, you know, you can, for example, go down a more formal business training, you know, such as consultancy training and so on. But at the end of the day, that's going to be a mindset, I think.
Right.
And I think a number of these three areas are going to be not just you know, where you train and how you train, but also how you develop your senses, if you like, or how you develop that kit, that toolkit over time. So in terms of problem solving, you know, I think making sure that you are volunteering to be on certain projects and certain, you know, as your career develops and you engage with people across the business, you know, not just in a marketing sense, but actually a general business sense. I think the other two areas in terms of being, you know, customer native and being business savvy, I would say, again, there are things that you can learn, but I think you also need to build your CV and build your experience as you go through your careers and never miss an opportunity, if you like, to enhance the experience that you gain. So in terms of, for example, the business savvy side, you know, of course you can go off and you can do an MBA or you can do a further business qualification. But also, I would say some of the things that really enhanced my business experience was making sure that you didn't put yourself, if you like, just in the marketing silo. You took the opportunities, for example, for secondments or, you know, what might seem like short detours in your career to experience other parts of the business. And also maybe take time out to go and spend time with parts of the business that day to day you never would as a marketer. So, for example, I think I probably learned as much about my marketplace and as much about the business I was working in by spending time in customer service. And that doesn't just mean listening in on customer calls, which would be an obvious thing for a marketer, but also understand the gripes and the issues that customer service people have within your business, because actually that's all part of your proposition and will either enhance or detract from what you put out into the market.
So an exciting time for marketers and a real opportunity to seize the moment.
I think it is. I think it is. And I think it will be a big disappointment if we didn't see, you know, in fact, more and more marketing leaders rising to the very top of their organisations and actually in B2B really driving their businesses forward.
Robert, thank you very much.
My next guest is Ros Barclay, Director at Marketing and PR Agency Coverdale Barclay. Ros, thanks very much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Great to be here.
Perhaps first of all, you can tell us a bit about Coverdale Barclay. What do you do?
Well, we are an agency that specialises in PR, marketing and stakeholder engagement for, as we describe it, districts and destinations undergoing change. What that means is, in reality, is medium and large-scale urban regeneration projects. So it could be a city centre or a town centre or a neighbourhood or a shopping destination that is changing in some way, and our job is to change perceptions of that place.
Wow, that sounds like quite a job. So what's important in terms of skill set, do you think, today to be a good marketer and communicator in that space?
I think it's important to understand how all the different elements of marketing and PR fit together. So if you're a B2B marketeer, how does that integrate with all the other elements that might make up a comms and marketing campaign? I think a good B2B marketeer needs to have commercial nous and identify and be able to sell internally the business benefits of a campaign. So it could be identifying comms objectives of reputation management, awareness of something, a product launch, a launch in our case of a place or relaunch of a place. So they've got to be able to sell that internally. With that comes a certain amount of gravitas required and ability to build relationships, because a marketing director isn't typically on an exec board, so they have to sell an idea internally to operations or finance to be able to, you know, gather the resource required, whether it's budget or people, before anything actually goes ahead. I think keeping it simple is important. Overcomplicating things, developing, for want of a better description, stunts, when actually something more strategic could be more powerful, and identifying and focusing on the target audience you are trying to target. It sounds really obvious, but in reality, we can't be all things to all people.
Wow, there's lots there. So let's try and take each bit in turn and unpick it a little bit. So the first thing you talked about was being able to understand marketing and PR and kind of across the board and how the different bits fit together. So does that mean actually I need to have done every one of those jobs?
No, fortunately.
Phew.
I think it's just having a basic understanding of what each element, what role it plays in the positioning or repositioning of a brand. You know, everything we do comes back to what is the brand proposition? What is this thing, this product, this brand, and who is it for? Mm. So everything has to relate back to that, but you don't have to be able to do everything in order to understand that. You just have to understand how it all fits together.
And you start with that brand focus.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then the second part that you talked about was commercial now. So tell me a bit more about that.
Well, it's not just selling an idea internally. It's about understanding how it's going to benefit the business. And that could be, if you're trying to sell it internally, you know, be proactive about setting your own KPIs to give reassurance that what you're going to do, the campaign you're going to run, is going to have some return on investment. You know, what are the measures of success? Because marketing, by its nature, can be quite intangible. And that makes it hard sometimes to justify the budget for a particular campaign. So I think understanding how you measure success, how you evaluate it, and how you then update your colleagues internally in other departments as to what success looks like, essentially.
And that's really interesting, I think, and a really great bit of advice, because quite often people in our profession tend to be focused on marketing and communicating externally rather than internally. And you probably need to have some view of you know, what balance of time you're going to spend between that internal communication and that external.
And in some ways, selling an idea or a concept or a product externally is easier than selling it internally, because you've got to be able to secure and justify the budget. So all of the internal relationships are as important. But, you know, relating everything you do back to the brand proposition and your objectives and the target audience every time ensures you're going to be consistent in all your comms.
Okay. Gravitas. Now, that strikes me of all the ones you've mentioned as being a bit of a tricky one, because how do I learn gravitas?
I think the best way to learn it is look to see how other people do it.
Okay.
I think, you know, we go to, as an agency, lots of industry events. And the most consummate professionals when it comes to, say, public speaking or delivering a message have an amazing capacity to deliver really simple messages. You know, they use 10 words when other people might use 30. And they exude confidence and you believe them. And they, as it was once described to me, let things land. Don't be don't feel uncomfortable if there's a pause, because actually it gives your audience, whoever that audience is, an opportunity to sort of let the message sink in and reflect on it before you then, at a million miles an hour, carry on with your next point.
So, because your next point was about keeping it simple. So is that kind of something that you would put under that gravitas heading?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, for want of a better description, cutting through the crap and thinking about your audience. You know, one of the skills I think in our industry is empathy and understanding human psychology. What is this like for the other person? What do they need to know? And that can be true of any meeting, you know.
Sure.
Know your audience, whether it's internal or external.
Okay. And we're specifically focusing in this segment on marketing and comms in the 2020s. So I'd be interested to kind of look at all of those different pillars that you've mentioned, and perhaps you can give me a bit of a sense of which of those has become more or less important in the 2020s. So, you know, is the understanding of fit together, or the importance of commercialization, or gravitas, or keeping it simple, or understanding your target audience, which of those are more important now than they were 5-10 years ago, and which less?
I think they're all important. I think keeping it simple is actually quite hard. There's a classic quote from, I think, Winston Churchill, "I'm sorry I didn't have time to write you a short letter."
Yes.
And actually, if you keep to that principle all of the time and everything you do, you're going to not overcomplicate things. And I think customers, clients, your audience understand that. You know, the attention spans are getting shorter, so keeping it simple is crucial.
Ros Barkley, Director of Marketing and PR Agency Coverdale Barkley. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
My next guest is Andrew Ainsworth, who is Marketing Strategy Manager at Cirium. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here.
Perhaps we should start off with, can you tell us a little bit about what Cirium is?
So we're a data and analytics organisation that focuses on aviation data. So we supply OEMs, airlines with operational insights on how aircraft are performing and market insight on the aviation sector in general.
So you're a marketing strategy manager there. What makes a great marketer, I guess if we take Cirium first of all, in your role, what is key in terms of skills required?
Firstly, understanding the market. And what do I mean by that? It's having a passion for whatever you're trying to communicate to your audience. And it can be a passion that you've had for a long time, or you might be in a role where you're learning something new and you're in a new industry. For me, I've always had a passion around aviation. So that made it a little bit easier for me to try and understand the cruxes and the angles that are happening across the market. But the reason that's so important is that as a marketeer, your job is to understand the market. That's fundamental if we talk about what our role is in an organization. And we're often surrounded by salespeople, product-tier people, who speak with the market every single day, and they get a customer's viewpoint from it. It's really important as a marketeer to come back into that conversation with some macro factors about what's affecting the market. And how you present those in meetings shows your knowledge and your understanding, which in my opinion gives you a greater gravitas in the organisation and in a meeting situation.
Can you give me an example? Because this is quite interesting in the sense that quite often salespeople will say, well, why do I need a marketer to come along and understand the market? For me, I'm in the market every day.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's kind of those macro factors that are important.
Absolutely. I mean, give you one example. If you're attending a conference or a trade show, take the time to step away from the stand. Go into the tracks and listen to the experts who are talking about the field. Then when you're in your next meeting where you're maybe supporting a sales representative, you can then ask an intelligent question to the customer about how something that is affecting the market is impacting on them. It gives you greater authority in the meeting, and also builds that trust between the sales manager and yourself that you truly do know what's happening in the marketplace.
And so how do I go about doing this? How is it that I can understand the market? I mean, maybe it's different per market? I don't know, but yeah. how do I set about that process?
I mean, there's a few easy things you can do using stuff like Google Alerts. So you can make sure you're getting messages from key news articles, signing up with following experts on Twitter, on LinkedIn, making sure you're on top of what they're saying about the industry. So they're very easy things that you can keep an eye on throughout the office. As you see new updates, share them with your sales leads. Be the person who is driving the intelligence for them. They're often thinking about contracts, thinking about renewals, thinking about targets and new business. And they will rightly have an understanding of what is going on, but it will be very much based on the person they're speaking to in an organization, so the direct buyer, or maybe a couple of influencers. I've always found it's positive to offer an alternative view from somebody who the salesperson might not know. They might not understand the complexities of the issue. And it allows people to step back a little bit and truly understand what is going on.
That's really interesting. So effectively, the marketer has a different lens on the market to the salesperson.
Absolutely. And I think for me, a big part of my career so far has always been as close to the sales organization as possible. I think that's fundamental. But you can't be a follower to the sales organization. You have to offer something new to the salesperson for them to really want to make this relationship about you and them.
And we're specifically focusing in this segment on marketing in the 2020s. So do you have a sense that understanding the marketplace is somehow more important in this decade than in the past?
Yeah, I mean, the markets are moving so fast. Everything's changing so quickly. So in my industry at the moment, we're monitoring the 737 MAX situation.
Right.
There's huge amounts of movement. There's rumours. What's going to happen with this aircraft? When's it going to come back into service? The market's looking for intelligence. And there are so many people putting out a different viewpoint that it's become more and more important that your story is the first story to hit.
Right.
And you need to be able to react and be agile enough to change direction quickly in order to react to anything that's happening in the market. And I think in the 2020s, that will be really important for marketeers to be able to say, okay, this was the message we launched with, but actually this has all changed in a month or a day. We need to rethink and we need to kind of go in a different direction.
Andrew Ainsworth, Marketing Strategy Manager at Cirium. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
My next guest is Chris Bagnall, who is CEO and founder of Transmission. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So what sort of qualities do you think are important in a B2B marketer today?
Sure. So I think first and foremost, personal skills is an absolute must. I don't know personally many shy B2B marketers. I think the role that we have to do and a lot of the roles that our clients have to do, it's quite an all-encompassing role within the business. You know, you can't necessarily be a sort of shrinking violet if you want to be an all-rounder B2B marketer. You just have too much exposure to the broader organization, or certainly if you want to be successful. Obviously, it depends on the kind of level that you are as an individual and the sort of function that you have within the business. But if you want to be an all-rounder B2B marketer, then you know, those personal, interpersonal skills are an absolute must.
Do you think they're more important now than they were, I don't know, 5-10 years ago?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think businesses historically have had very siloed departments. And so you could, I guess, historically get away with being that person in the background that just did a specific function and only did that specific function. Let's face it, not many businesses have the time and the resource to be able to do that nowadays. So you need to be an all-rounder.
And
if you're going to be an all-rounder, you're going to be exposed to a whole bunch of different parts of the organisation.
And from a marketer's perspective, you've kind of got to have those personal skills, not just with the external environment, but also internally within your business as well.
I think it's more internal, actually. I think the ability to get on, to be persuasive, to be vocal, to have a voice, to listen, to be that person that is appreciated in the business is actually even more important than the external view of the business.
And how, I don't know whether this is something that can be acquired. Is there a way of actually building up, in your view, your personal skills as a marketer and really try and develop that kind of extroversion, I suppose?
Yeah, so it doesn't come naturally for everyone, let's face it. You know, some people are just naturally more extrovert and out there and perhaps more interesting to people, and you know, people gravitate to those types of individuals. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to have those traits to be successful. And sometimes you've got to, you know, take yourself out of your comfort zone and learn to be a different type of person, perhaps in a working environment, than you would naturally be outside of it. So I definitely don't think it comes naturally. I think that there are ways that you can learn certain aspects. I think forcing yourself into situations that are uncomfortable time and time and time and time again, putting your hand up for things that are uncomfortable time and time again, because you're only going to get better at it if you try.
You can't get complacent in this sort of business, can you?
You can't, definitely can't be sitting back waiting for it to happen.
Okay, so that's kind of one quality. Is there a kind of skill that you would associate that with that we should talk about?
I think you've got to be able to hold your own, you know, in terms of sticking up for yourself, you know, having a voice, being persuasive, like I mentioned. If you are that person that always says yes to everything without a, you know, maybe an argument, or a, or you're a type of individual that doesn't like confrontation and just agrees with the norm without necessarily having a voice, I think you're not going to be successful. You know? So I think standing up for yourself, being persuasive, learning to improve the areas that you know you're not necessarily good at, being a team player, being collaborative, making sure people feel good about you as an individual within your organisation and outside the organisation. And some of these things will, I think, come naturally. You know? So it's, I guess, more sort of life skills than physical, you know, maybe technical skills.
Sure, but equally important in the context of the world that we're in. Okay, what else?
So I think, you know, nowadays, if you're not a collaborative worker, I think you, you know, like I mentioned, you may not have a function that works across all disciplines or departments within the business. But let's face it, nowadays you have to wear many more hats, and you usually have to work with a whole bunch of different people within an organisation. You know, technology's helped collaborative working in no end of ways. But also I kind of couple that with the ability to work fast and the ability to be agile when you work. Doesn't necessarily have to be perfect, but you need to be collaborative, you need to be agile, because there's going to be a whole bunch of things that are thrown at you on a day-to-day basis, and you need to juggle a lot of balls.
From a marketing perspective, if you look at the kind of different areas of the business, are there any areas that you would say marketers today have to be more collaborative with than others?
I don't know a marketing team of one. not so much, certainly in our client base. There are very few marketeers that don't work on projects, and even at a senior level, you know, even though you might not be in the weeds, you're collaborating with your peers across a, you know, maybe a C level or a board level or an executive team level, and you're caring more about what your function or what your team do in terms of having an impact on the overall business. So I think it depends on the role that you have within the business, and that can obviously differ dramatically depending on how senior you are and also the size of the organisation and sometimes how global or not that organisation is.
Okay, we've got time for one more.
Sure. I think a really important skill for any marketer, you know, B2B or B2C, is to the ability to be able to put yourself in the shoes of your customer, but also be able to change your perhaps preconception of what you historically thought of any particular subject. You know, we are, as individuals, you know, we're predisposed to have certain preconceptions about certain things, and I think as marketeers, we need to continuously challenge what we know, what the business knows, how the business can learn, and frankly, let's face it, do something about it. So if you're always that individual that is, no, it's my way or no way, or my answer is the right answer, or I had an opinion of a specific thing that is 10 years old and it's still true today, that doesn't wash. You know, you have to be able to be adaptable. You have to be able to put yourself in the shoes of an individual, because if you're trying to talk to an audience about a given subject, you need to try and feel how they feel about what you're saying. You know, and if your opinion is, well, everybody feels the same way as I do, that's not going to work for many marketers.
It's a tough starting point, isn't it? Chris Bagnall, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Andrea Clatworthy, Robert Ainger, Ros Barclay, Andrew Ainsworth and Chris Bagnall. And thanks to you for listening. Please do let us know what you thought of today's podcast. Give us a rating or a review, or drop us a line at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've got something interesting, practical and visionary to share with our listeners, why not volunteer to be a guest on a future podcast? But no sales pitches, product demos, creds, presentations or theoretical nonsense, please. They're strictly out of bounds. You could also join the Business Marketing Club for events, mentoring and thought leadership for the B2B marketing community. You can do it right now by pressing that big yellow join button at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks very much for listening and have a great day.